And a good Thursday afternoon to you. Thursday, November 2nd. Welcome to The Lowdown. Thank you so much for being with us. This is the Phenom, the conscience of KHDK, Jason H.W. Ross. And I am Damian Barling. Again, we thank you so much for being with us. Got a full show today. Got a long show today. Garrett Temple is going to join us at 2:30. Your Sacramento Kings will get into that latest loss against Boston here in just a heartbeat. The second half of the NFL season kicks off tonight in New York. A suddenly intriguing matchup between the Buffalo Bills and New York Jets, which you can get here beginning at 5 o'clock on KHDK. And, of course, with the start of a new week in the NFL comes the start of a new fantasy week. And, man, a lot changed this week, Jason, with the trade deadline, with the Ezekiel Elliott ruling, we think. Nate Lundy of the Fantasy Football Hour will be with us at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. It's been a strange start to the NBA season. We'll get into all of that. Jessica Mendoza, ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. She's going to be with us here at 12:30. You going to be okay for that?
I'm very excited for that.
You have never been this excited for an interview we've ever done.
Yeah, she's really good.
She is fantastic.
Yes.
And she will be with us at 12:30. I think we'll look back, Jay Ross, and remember this World Series is one of the greatest that we ever got to watch. It had a little bit of everything. It had kind of the shootout. It had incredible pitching matchups. Game 7, which I absolutely 110% blame on you.
Yes.
Because you said there was one thing that we don't want in this upcoming Game 7, and that was for a team to go up 4-0, 5-0, 6-0. In the first, couple innings. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It took the L.A. crowd out of it. And they probably, I mean, the L.A.
doesn't
crowd.
Doesn't take much for that, though.
Well, they probably went home.
Yeah.
Or went to eat. Or
didn't arrive yet.
Or that. Yeah. They just turned around and were like, screw it. But it was still a very compelling series. Dave Roberts is going to be second guest on everything he did. You know, in hindsight, why did you start Yu Darvish when Clayton Kershaw could go out there and pitch 4 innings? You know, we'll talk to Jessica Mendoza about that. I mean, hindsight's always crystal clear. But at the moment, Yu Darvish looked like the right guy for that game. It was his turn in the rotation. It seemed to make total sense. We knew all hands would be on deck. It just didn't really play out for the Dodgers, and the Astros had a tremendous series.
Yeah, the Dodgers yesterday will kick themselves for, I think it was 5 of the first 6 innings, they had multiple runners on and didn't score.
Yeah.
I think they got the one in the sixth.
Yeah, I think in the sixth inning, I think they had a total of 8 stranded runners.
Yeah, and they ended with 10. And then 7th, 8th, 9, they didn't really threaten. But mm-hmm. those were their innings. And people say, well, it was 5-1. It was over. No, not if you get one or two others in there somewhere. Now you disrupt the bullpen. Now you get one guy on that's tying runs at the plate. I mean, it just takes a little bit to get it going. We know the Dodgers' bats are dangerous. That they did not hit. I mean, that was their day to hit. They got enough guys on. Houston kept hitting batters. I mean, it's like, man, they're giving them opportunities. And I don't feel like Houston had that many opportunities. They just made the most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Dodgers didn't yesterday.
They didn't. And, you know, we kept waiting, thinking, well, we've seen this before. We've seen this series. And you mentioned how dangerous the Dodger bats are. There was a point, you know, you brought up them leaving runners. I think it was in the sixth. It was still right in the middle of the game, I think. And there were 2 runners on for Yasiel Puig, and he had a long at-bat where he was cutting at everything. And one thing that I really like about Yasiel Puig is one thing that a lot of baseball purists hate, and that's his emotion at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's reacting to every pitch. Like the John Smoltz would talk about him anticipating a pitch, but he'd be anticipating the wrong pitch. And when he would swing and foul it off, he'd react to it. You know, thinking he was going to get a slider when he wound up getting a fastball and all of these sorts of different things. But when I think that at-bat ended with him roping something to first.
Yeah.
And it's like, when that happened, it was like, this isn't the Dodgers night.
Yeah.
If they can't make a move in this position with him at the plate, it's not their night.
And we had so many great games. It still had its potential to be the same as the rest of the series. It just didn't.
Yeah.
Without getting that extra run or 2 or even 3 to make it right there, it just didn't have the drama that we had hoped for, but really incredible series all in all. I thought it was a good postseason, and I think baseball should feel good about that because the Astros are young. We already talked about how the Yankees seem to be ahead of schedule. I think you could argue that Cleveland may have been the most complete team. They didn't win it. Cubs will be good again. Dodgers should be good. It's a good time for baseball.
Yeah, and those are all good conversations to have. It's like, who's going to be back, you know, when at this time next year, who are we going to be talking about?
Yeah.
You know, because you mentioned the Yankees. The Yankees are it felt like all year were well ahead of the so-called schedule that I think they even had themselves on.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Cleveland, where are the Nationals going to fit into this conversation? What could be, by the way, their last year with Bryce Harper? It's almost certainly going to be their last year with Bryce Harper. Where are they going to fit in this? And, you know, there's some intriguing conversations that we'll have. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the World Series right now because, again, Jessica Mendoza is going to join us in about 23 minutes, and she's one of baseball's great minds, so she'll be able to break this down in a better way than any of us could. But it feels like there's so – the Houston Astros lost 111 games like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And, here, you know, there's the famous Sports Illustrated cover that's been floating around now for weeks. And it's like a collector's item now. Like, it's being sought out by collectors. It has a picture of Springer on the front. Your 2017 champion is from, like, 2014. And how does this happen in baseball? This doesn't happen anywhere else.
Yeah.
In football, we have the any given Sunday thing. But in football, it boils down to one position. In basketball, it's a star-driven league. The power goes where the stars go. But baseball is entirely different. Like, the stars are in Anaheim, Washington. They're not here.
Yeah.
They're not here. So we'll get back more into the World Series at 12:30 when Jessica Mendoza joins us. Unfortunately, we'll shift gears now. Looking at the text line, by the way, if you want to jump in the conversation, you know we always love to hear from you. The show is literally nothing without you. 44-1140, that's the text line. That is up in front of me. You can get in on the phone lines as well. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Kings lose again last night. Kings lose big again last night. 113-86. They didn't get off to a horrible start in the first quarter, but that second quarter came around and it bit them, and the third quarter just killed them.
Yeah, third quarter was a wrap. And the problem with this now to me is not the record, which isn't good, 1-7. It's they haven't been in a fourth quarter here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's where you're saying to yourself, what, you know, you can lose games. I'm not surprised they lost to Boston by any means, but you need to start getting competitive for longer stretches, more than a few minutes, more than a quarter, more than a half. And they haven't been in a little while. And I don't know what the answer is, because you can look a little bit around the NBA and you say, yeah, I get it. I understand what the Kings are going through, what they're trying to do. But is it any different than Phoenix? Phoenix won yesterday, beat a good Washington. They're 4-4.
Yeah.
I don't look at that roster and say I love Phoenix's roster, but they found a way to win four games. You know, I'm not asking the Kings to be 500, but two or three wins, and it's just still at 1-7 and not being competitive is really tough to watch.
The Phoenix one gets me because I watched the Wizards game pretty much in its entirety. I had that on the iPad while the Kings game was on, and I'm watching Phoenix like, okay, Washington's not playing well despite what they did to Sacramento. They're not playing well, and I'm looking at Phoenix like, what is it? Like, why is this clicking for them? Remember, was it even a week ago that they fired their head coach? Right. I was going to say they're a star-ish player. He's not there.
Right.
They were just like, you don't want to be here? Peace out. Screw it. We'll get rid of you when we can. If we can work out a deal, we can. If not, just sit at home. And it's like, what is it about this team? And I'm watching and I'm watching and I'm watching. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Why are they 4-4 and playing the way that they are, and the Sacramento Kings are 1-7 and playing the way that they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing just on the two comparisons, like last night, T.J. Warren for Phoenix scores 40. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many games would it take for a King player to get 40 points? Mm-hmm. There's not a game yet where we go, all right, Kings lost, but Buddy scored 29. Kings lost, but Scal had 25 and 13. Kings lost, but De'Aaron went nuts for his first career 30-point game. Those things haven't happened yet, and I think when those things start to happen for a few individuals, that's when I think Kings fans will feel better going, oh, yeah, I see a future there in Frank Mason or in whatever player we're seeing that has that big night. It just – I would almost go down the list and say, Damian, right now, tell me who's playing well And if you can name a player.
You tried to do this at the end of the show yesterday. Yeah. I didn't have an answer.
So that's not good. I mean, that doesn't need to, it would be ideal if the whole roster was, but the fact that I don't even know if we can say one player, that's a problem.
It is. And the other frustrating thing is we come in, you know, game after game after game. And Garrett Temple, I'm strongly contemplating this. We'll have our show meeting here on the air because I forgot to tell you this. I was thinking this last night when the game was over. Garrett Temple's going to join us at 2:30. He does every week. I don't even want to talk to him about basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think? I mean, do you think I can't imagine he's looking forward to coming on the radio station and asking questions about why this team is losing by, you know, an average of by 24 points a game, you know, night after night after night. I'm trying. Hey, what are you listening to?
Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing today? I think they're staying in Boston today.
They did at least for the night. I don't know if where they are now, but yeah.
What are you guys doing? Like, yeah. I don't know what to say about last night's game, and it was kind of the same issue that we had after Washington. It's like I don't know what to say specifically about the game, but night after night or game after game, we come in here the next day, and I don't feel like there's a storyline from the game. We're just trying to pick apart. Okay, what's the storyline for the Sacramento Kings? And my question coming out of this game now is, you know, as questions continue to form throughout the season, and I feel like we're going to end with more questions than we are going to get answers. Is this too much? Meaning, are the Sacramento Kings trying to work in too many young players? Like, is there a point where it's great to go young? It's a good idea to go young.
Yeah.
I see the direction that you're going. Cool. But you might have too many players. I mean, between Bogdan being in his, you know, first year in the NBA, De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield in his second year in the NBA. You know, then you got Scal, who you want to see whatever from him, and Frank Mason, Malachi. There's so many. It's like, okay, so we have this whole young group of players, and then what, three veterans?
Right.
Four?
No, I think that's a fair question. I would almost say, are they working in not even too many young players, just too many players? I think, like, every night, last night, I think they played 12.
They played everybody.
But then just look at the minutes. I mean, what would happen if Coach Yeager, just for a night, for a week, for a month, said, I'm playing eight players.
Mm-hmm.
So our top guy, whoever that is, or minute guy, I'm gonna let someone run out there for 37 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What was the top yesterday? 26? 28 maybe?
I mean, 28. De'Aaron Fox played 28 minutes and was 2 of 8, by the way.
But we're not seeing 34, 33, 29, 38 minutes. It's a lot of sprinkling in a lot of different guys, and I think that you can still get stuff done in 16 minutes and 21 minutes, but what would it look like if you gave – I don't know. Willie, tonight I'm playing you 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
35 minutes. You might be in foul trouble. You might have a double-double. I want to see what you look like in 35 minutes as opposed to 19.
So to kind of expand on that a little bit, and I love that idea, is how much can you evaluate in such limited minutes with so many guys?
Yeah.
And can I take your idea, because I like it a lot, and further it a little bit and say, okay, great, let's go with the eight-man rotation.
Okay.
Right? But all four veterans are in that rotation.
I'm fine with that.
That way you're cutting down the number of young players. And then I can hear in my head and visualize the text line. Why isn't Malachi? Why isn't Frank Mason playing? Yeah. I love Frank Mason. He's a little bulldog. He's going to do A, B, C, D, F, and G. Or, God forbid, why isn't De'Aaron Fox playing? This is blasphemous. Why is it? I can visualize that. And I don't think that type of stuff bothers Dave Yeager. I don't think any of that stuff bothers him at all. I think that's worth a discussion within that coaching staff, though,
yeah,
with Yeager and Elston and those guys to figure out. I mean, because over the course of eight games, what have you got? Like, what has your evaluation process given you?
Incomplete, right?
Besides
performance, but on individual, incomplete. And there's too many guys who are wondering what's wrong. Why? Kings fans may think this is crazy, but we saw glimpses of it last year. I think if we put... It's unfair to do this, but if we say Papi Giannis is one of the, I don't want to say worst players, but whatever, the guy that's going to get the
you
least
can say,
amount
I'll
of minutes.
Say it. Okay. Would it make you feel better if I said
sure.
it?
Well, no. Okay, let's say it. One of the worst players in the team. But I firmly believe if they said tomorrow we're going to play a week straight and he's going to play 35 minutes, he'd have some double-doubles. He would. I really believe. Now, I don't know if that means they're going to win more or play better per se, but he showed some of that. I don't think he's a guy that's ready to quite be the guy that gets all those minutes all the time. But there's that saying that even the bad teams have a 20-point score just because the points have to come somewhere. This team can't even get to that because I think they're spreading it out too much.
Yeah, Buddy Hield topped out at 19. Zach Randolph had 16. Jessica Mendoza joining us at 12:30. We'll get back to the World Series. Brandon, what's happening, brother?
Hey, I just wanted to give you guys a call. Thanks for taking it. I appreciate it.
Of course.
And as much as this pains me, it hurts to say, I'm a diehard Kings fan. I've had family that played for the Kings when they were really bad. I kind of think that we're the worst team in the NBA right now. I hate to say it, but that's kind of my feeling right now.
No, I think you're right.
It's not a stretch.
It sucks, but I think you're completely right.
And it's frustrating. You know, I'm a diehard Kings fan, as I mentioned, and it's just it's tough to watch. You know, I record the games, and then I look at my phone to see what the score is before I go back to watch it. And I get to the end of the game, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to watch this. I'm just going to delete it because there's not much to watch. And I don't know if the offense fits this team. There's too many times that I see the center at the top of the key out on an island. You see Willie Cauley get the ball, and he turns around, and he's not sure what to do with it. They know he's not going to score. They know he's not going to shoot from there. And it's just, I don't know if this offense fits the players that we have. We have to be more up-tempo. That's going to, you know, play to our strength.
We appreciate you, Brandon. Thanks for the call, man. Brandon, I can hear the frustration in your voice.
Really.
And I think a lot of people can sympathize with that. Josh, what's happening, man? Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Yeah, I could piggyback on what the guy said before. I mean, I'm frustrated, too. I'm sure just like a lot of other people are. The only thing that I can think of, though, and again, I'm not in Coach Yeager's mindset or anything, and I don't know what exactly the front office is thinking, but if you kind of look at it, is it possible that they are trying to just see what they can out of those minutes and get as many different rotations in because they want to see what the matchups are like and what they're doing in certain situational things against other teams, other matchups, to see how the players are doing against that. And also look at, from a developmental standpoint, taking that information, statistics, and all that stuff and going back and saying, okay, look, this is where we succeeded, this is where we didn't. And when you do things like that, yeah, it doesn't look good when you're paying as much money as you're paying to go and sit in a seat at the arena to watch it. I know it doesn't make sense, but does it, though?
You know what, and I want to say, Josh, it's actually an interesting point because I want to go to something Dave Yeager said specifically in the postgame last night. He was asked about Scal. Scal didn't play for the longest time, then got in and I think played the game's final 16 minutes. And his response to that kind of fits to what you said. He said, I didn't want to see him go up against Jason Tatum because Tatum's more of a three. Scal's probably more of a four. I understood his thought, but me seeing the team struggle, I kind of want to see Scal go through that. See him guard a three to see if he can do it. Or maybe they're protecting some guys in certain situations, but I think you have an interesting point there that could be something they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, yeah, you want to see Scal kind of work through those problems and see if he can overcome them, of course. However, when we brought Coach Yeager over, we knew what we were getting. We knew his mindset. We knew how fundamental he is when he presents the team and when he's out there coaching the team. We already knew that getting him, and we were okay with that. But now we have a whole bunch of young players, and now we're not happy with the product that we're currently seeing because we're not seeing at the end of it, we're not seeing a W. But is there a bigger picture at the end is basically what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and you know what, Josh, we appreciate the call, man, and most of all, appreciate you listening. I think it's going to be a long time before we know the answer to that.
Yeah, I agree. Okay,
it's going to be several years before we know the answer to that. Hey, Kurt.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Good.
So my take on this is what a rebuild looks like. I mean, us as Sacramento fans haven't truly, really seen a rebuild. We've stunk the last 10 years, but I personally don't think that's like it was a tear it down and rebuild it like we are now. We have 7-8 players that are pretty much, you know, first, second year playing with each other for the first time against the best players in the world. I mean, what do we expect?
Yeah, and Kurt, that's kind of what we were talking about a few minutes ago is it too much? Is there a point where, okay, it's great to rebuild. It's great to have these young players. It's great to be positive about the young talent that you have on your roster, but can you develop all of these guys at the same time?
I don't think that this is going to be a situation that's going to last the entire season. I think that Yeager has full experience with young guys from his earlier coaching in his career, and they're still trying to figure out what the rotation is going to be. I expect this team in the second half of the year to be better than the first half of the year. And so, I mean, I'm all in. I see where they're going, and I think for us to complain and, you know, and you know, whine about, you know, the next, okay, the next game, they're probably going to lose too. I mean, every single game, it's only been 8 games. I mean, let's give them, you know, a full rebuild is going to take 3 years. Let's give them the first half, you know, or this year as fans to see, okay, how was the first half versus the second half? I can almost guarantee the second half is going to be better because the rotations will be set. The chemistry will be, you know, much better because the coach, the experienced coach and staff, are going to figure out what works, and that's what I'm looking forward to, and I'm all in. Go Kings.
There you go, Kurt. We appreciate you, man. Thank you. I like Kurt's mentality.
Yeah.
I don't know, because we think, okay, the second half of the season, the rotations are going to be set, and they're going to be doing this, this, and this. Are they?
I don't know. I can't say yes. And I don't know.
I'm not going to use the word. But if you keep this rotation all year and there's not a big improvement the second half of the season, who's to say that that wasn't the plan all along?
Mm.
You know where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm.
They have a draft pick next year.
Right.
Or I guess the end of this year.
Correct.
They don't next year. It's the famous one-year tank window that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry I said the word. I didn't mean to say the word. It's that famous one-year window there for a good draft pick that we talked about.
Yeah.
I'm not insinuating that's what they're doing. But what I am saying is it will be really difficult for Kings fans. But at some point, I feel like to get the most out of you have to pick. You look at your roster and you go, okay, Buddy, De'Aaron, and Scal. Those are the guys we are focusing on now moving forward. You talked about, hey, you're playing 30 minutes. You're playing this number of minutes. You're playing this number of minutes. It's those guys that are doing it.
Yeah.
Willie Cauley-Stein is a really polarizing player here on the text line. Not polarizing in the way that DeMarcus was, not by any stretch of the imagination. But there are a lot of Kings fans who are like, man, it seems to be there. There's more pressure, I think, on Willie than anybody else because now DeMarcus is gone. Now, everyone blamed Willie Cauley-Stein's lack of development on DeMarcus Cousins' presence. Okay, well, DeMarcus isn't here. Yeah, 21 points in the first game of the season. He had 2 last night.
Yeah.
He hasn't cracked 12 since. He's had single digits.
They're giving you the minutes.
He's
enough
there.
Minutes.
Well,
I should
he's
say.
Starting. He's only playing 19 minutes,
yeah,
which goes back to your original point.
Play him if that's what you want.
We'll get back to Kings basketball. I know a lot of people are eager to talk about this, but the Astros won their first World Series yesterday. We will talk with Jessica Mendoza next here on the Lowdown. Jessica Mendoza is going to join us here in about 7 minutes. Garrett Temple is going to be with us at 2:30. We got WWE 2K18 to give away. We'll do that in the 1 o'clock hour. 2 o'clock is pretty packed, so we'll do that in the 1 o'clock hour. That'll be your next chance to win WWE 2K18. We got about 7 minutes before Jessica joins us. So, Greg, let's get you in here. Greg, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, man. Thanks for the call.
Oh, no problem. I wanted to piggyback on what you were saying when the show started about how the roster is pretty much all nothing but rookies and second-year players, third-year players. Do you think that's why the team isn't really playing too well? Because I'm looking at the Sixers, and they got some good talent on there with Simmons, Embiid, Zark, however you say it. But do you think there's too many rookies and second-year, third-year players on our team?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, in short, that's
the way it's constructed.
It's a lot of guys to try to develop all at the same time, Greg, and that's kind of one of my concerns moving forward with the Sacramento Kings. As Jason noted, these guys aren't getting, you know, by NBA standards, they're not getting a ton of minutes, so it's going to be really difficult for guys like Buddy and De'Aaron Fox and Justin Jackson and Scala Bissiere to develop all at the same time, I mean.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, too. And then talk about the Sixers again. They don't really have – that many veterans that I know of that could make will impact the young players, but everybody's saying, oh, we need veterans, and it doesn't seem like it's really working for now. But do you think that's because the Sixers don't really have veterans to mentor those three? How come they're prospering more than our young men?
Well, Greg, we appreciate you. Thank you for the phone call. Most of all, man, thanks for listening. Sixers do have it. I mean, J.J. Redick is there.
Mm-hmm.
They have some guys there. And remember, it's not just helping these guys on the floor. It's helping them off too.
Right.
There is a lot of value in guys like George Hill, Garrett Temple, Zach Randolph, Vince Carter. There's a lot of value in those guys being here.
Yeah, and I think we can go back to even the question we started the show with, who's playing well. I think the veterans are in that group too. I mean, George Hill is the highest paid king. He is probably, according to a lot of the rankings, the best king. He needs to play better.
Mm-hmm.
Would more minutes benefit him?
Yeah, and that's what I was about to say. We got to go back to your original question. Your original point. George Hill played 23 minutes last night. George Hill on another team where he signed in the offseason to be the starting point guard is closer to what you originally proposed. He's probably playing 35 to 36, that's 37 minutes or more.
So give him 10 more minutes last night, we'll say, to 33. I don't know, there's a few more points, a few more stats. I don't know if they win, but I think we're looking at George Hill differently if he's averaging 16 as a king as opposed to closer to single digits.
Yeah.
But that's not the way they're playing it right now.
George Hill, Zach Randolph, and Zach might not fit in that category, but if I were to pick Hill, Randolph, Willie, those guys need to be playing 30-plus minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like your idea of, hey, pick eight.
Yeah.
And that's who you got to roll with.
And go for it for a while and see how that works and see who develops. And you're still sprinkling in some of those young guys because that's important. That's that's what the season needs to be about, is finding some core guys to build with. But I think to find a way to be competitive, to find a way to still grow people, has got to be the target. And right now they haven't been able to achieve kind of either one at the moment.
I just don't know how does Buddy develop? How does De'Aaron Fox develop? Or even more, Scal, what was going on with Scal last night? Did he play the first half at all?
No, and that's what was the weird part, where they didn't let him play until later because of the matchup with Tatum, is what Coach Yeager said. And I thought that was kind of curious. But
I saw his, I can't say I really noticed that he wasn't playing. I was just kind of like watching, and I think I saw something from Katie at halftime, and then I saw, and then I realized, oh.
Yeah, he hasn't played.
And then I saw the post-game comments later.
Yeah.
I saw the post-game video and was like, wait, what? He said something like, we need him 2 years from now or something along those lines. And it was, what?
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that was strange. I would say if there was maybe one small positive yesterday, they did move Buddy to the bench. And I think if this team was good and up and running and players in the starting five are rolling, I think Buddy would be a fantastic bench player. He came off the bench yesterday, first time they've moved him there, and he started to make some shots. He was going against the other team's second group, and I hope that's something, because Buddy is a better scorer than he's been playing. He's had some open looks, and he's been bad. Well, he went 7-11 and scored 17. He also, sadly, led the team in rebounds with 7.
Mm-hmm.
Rebounding has been awful. They got doubled up, 52 to 26 yesterday.
I will go back to someone who said something earlier. We had a call earlier was insinuating that the Kings need to run more.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great counterpoint on the text line, is it's really difficult to run when you're not getting stops.
Right.
Because there's only a certain amount that you can run when a play stops and you inbound the ball.
Yeah.
It's doable, but unless you have Steve Nash, circa early 2000s, it's going to be difficult. Unless you have a point guard that is willing to rush all four players up the floor, not on a fast break, but on an inbounds pass, so many people think just running is moving faster. It's not.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what up-tempo basketball is. It's not just the simple art of getting up the floor faster. There's a lot more to it, and a lot more you have to see and be willing to do in a short period of time. And it always cracks me up when I hear coaches say during the offseason, and not that Dave Yeager said this, this was a text and a call exchange. It always cracks me up when coaches say, well, we're going to run this year. We're going to run. We're going to – like, no, you're not. George Karl did it. Well, we're going to run. We're going to be an up-tempo team. No, you're not. You don't have the personnel to be an up-tempo team.
Yeah.
And your best player has no interest in running up and down the floor every 12 to 13 seconds.
Yeah, the top two players were half-court players, Rudy and DeMarcus.
Yeah. So it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
The coaching staff has to build around the personnel. Now, what is Dave Yeager attempting to build here? I have no idea. I'm sure he does.
Right.
And hell is none of my business. I'm just a consumer.
Yeah.
I'm just watching. Maybe it doesn't matter what I think. But I can say I have no idea what he's doing.
Right, yeah.
And I have no idea. Like, I don't know. Back to your, who do we point at and say, well, it's okay because we got.
Yeah.
Or it's okay because.
We're not saying that, though. We don't know who that is yet.
Malik Monk played great last night.
That's the thing. Like, can someone have that game where we're literally here going, all right, they lost to Boston, even if the score was the same, 113-86. Man, De'Aaron.
Yeah.
22-7-7. You're like, that is what the future is about. But that didn't happen.
And at some point, you've got to cut the cord and say, all right, D, you going 35 tonight, man.
Right.
You're going 35.
True.
That's how it's going to be. Houston Astros, we're going to shift gears here for a minute. The Houston Astros won their first World Series in franchise history, and we're so happy to bring in, for the very first time, Woo-hoo! ESPN Sunday Night Baseball analyst Jessica Mendoza. Jessica, how are you after the World Series? Jessica, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry.
What made the Astros one game better than the Dodgers?
Oh, man. I mean, first of all, the series was just so, like, evenly balanced that it's crazy to think that, like, the Game 7 was, like, honestly just not a domination, but definitely a clear, like, the Astros were better. If you were to pick the one thing, I would say the difference of the trade of Justin Verlander versus the trade for Yu Darvish. I feel like those two, you think about the big number two pitchers, really, would, you know, to go behind Kershaw and Keuchel. And for the Astros, it was Justin Verlander who basically carried them in so many ways. And then the exact opposite, Yu Darvish lost it for them, absolutely lost it for them. And not to blow him up, but those were the big trades to be able to be like, who's going to be the guy that's our second ace behind our, like, the guy?
Yeah. And Jessica, one part I thought was going to be a key to the series in favor of the Dodgers was their bullpen, and there were moments where the bullpen looked like the best bullpen in baseball, but as they look back in the series, there were a couple of games the bullpen didn't get it done. Did that kind of surprise you as this now has played out, that the Dodgers bullpen maybe slightly let them down a bit?
Yeah, just because I felt like what got the Dodgers to the World Series, that something that they couldn't do the last 4 years when they were really just as good, is they never had the bullpen pieces. They always had Kenley Jansen. They had great starting pitching, but they didn't have the bridge guys like a Brandon Morrow. To have Kenta Maeda be a starting pitcher in the bullpen and be as successful as he was. So to have those guys just was really the difference of this team. And then they get to the World Series, but it makes sense as you look back. And again, because of, you know, Rich Hill got pulled, I felt like, too early in Game 2. Then Yu Darvish goes 1 2/3 in Game 3. They have to go to the bullpen early. All that, I think, was fine then. The bullpen didn't necessarily let them down. Then they got tired. And that's when it just got really, really bad. And the Astros bullpen wasn't good either. So it was just, that's where we had that epic Game 5. It was like, nobody's going to shut down anyone's bats, and we're just going to keep on scoring.
Jessica Mendoza with us here on the Lowdown. Jess, are the Astros, you mentioned Justin Verlander a minute ago, are they celebrating today if they don't make that trade?
No, absolutely not. And I feel like that's what helped get them past the Yankees. It's what helped get them, really, just his presence alone, and obviously the innings that he provided, but the way these guys gravitated towards him. I mean, Bregman, after he had the walk-off hit in Game 5, the first guy he looked like almost like a son would to his father. And I'm not saying Verlander's that old to Bregman, but really that's what it felt like. Is this, like, he's at home plate. They're all, like, kind of dogpiling him and giving him. And he looks to Verlander, and that was, like, the one arm he reached to. Like, almost like, that's the person I'm doing this for. And everyone said it in the clubhouse and being around the team the last 2 weeks. You could just feel it. He changed this team in a way that got them – not only to the World Series, but allowed him to win it.
I want to ask you about a guy who was so important for the Dodgers all season long, but and did some big moments in the postseason as well as in Bellinger. But when you have that many strikeouts and the kind of that many moments where last night the Dodgers left so many guys on base, would that do anything going forward? Because they love him. They think he's going to be great, and he should be. Would that derail any of his confidence not shining in the biggest moments?
No, I mean, it's going to sit with him, and I think he'll remember it forever. Be honest, it'll be kind of that one thing that drives him, just to be able to have somewhere in between. And I know that's kind of 2017 with a lot of hitters now. You hit home runs, you strike out a lot. But in the postseason, we've seen the success come from when you try to just shorten your swing and go with it. You have that ability, and he did that. Gosh, what was it, Game 4, where he came out of it and he had that big double to left center field where he just kind of shortened up and went with it. thing is when you haven't done that all season long, it might work, like, one or two here and there, but that's not his style. So I think him kind of figuring out how he can evolve and adapt, remembering how young this guy is, how young there are so many players that played in this World Series, but Cody Bellinger especially, going to be the rookie of the year. I mean, this is a young guy that literally couldn't figure out how to adapt when the pitching was able to find his hold.
I know this is a common talking point today, Jessica, but 4 years ago, the Houston Astros lost 111 games. How did they turn this around so quickly?
Because they lost 111 games consecutive years, they were able to go out and get top draft picks. And you credit Jeff Luhnow for being able to find not just, obviously, the Carlos Correas, George Springer. They went and found Jose Altuve. But then you get a guy like Dallas Keuchel out of Arkansas, who's a fifth-round guy. Go back and look at his numbers in college. No one was thinking. And I spoke to Kyle Peterson, who does our college baseball coverage for ESPN. And he said he saw, Dallas Keuchel in college and never would have picked him to be a Cy Young Award winner. So not that the Astros were brilliant and saying this guy's going to be amazing, but they definitely saw something in him. Same with a guy like Charlie Morton, to go get him in the offseason. He's an under-talked-about tool. He came out and closed that game last night, and literally I'm sitting there afterwards, and we're all saying, Charlie Morton is kind of that secret guy that we all ridiculed. The Astros went and got him this offseason. Like, that's going to be another one of your starters. Like, he's injury-prone. He hasn't been consistent. So my point is they lost 111 a game. Yes, 4 years ago they were awful. Because they lost all those games, they were able to build this team and do it right with a lot of number one draft picks. And those were the ones that really led them to the World Series.
It sounds like the Astros trusted the process. I could be wrong, yes. But that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know what's kind of cool, though, about this Astros team is, you got to remember, like, 3 years ago, this was, like, the leading team in the analytics as far as doing the most shifts, kind of being – just constantly tinkering with all the different, like, nuances that we see now with the sabermetrics. That's a big part of baseball. They've actually backed down. They're still a big analytic franchise, but what I was impressed with this year's team is this was a team that struck out. I think there were only two teams that struck out more in baseball than the Houston Astros the last two seasons, okay? That's kind of like, all right, that's normal. That's kind of what we get. Literally the number one team in baseball and the least amount of strikeouts was this offense. They turned that around. And their bullpen was not good. So you think about, like, where the game is headed. It's headed towards a ton of strikeouts for offense and bullpen pieces being, like, the biggest thing. The Astros didn't even have either one of those. And I think that just goes to show you with the day of analytics, there's still stuff that's more of a feel, changing, adapting, and not always just going by the script of what baseball needs to be.
Jessica, I know you get a chance to see all these guys, but I'm glad America got this chance to see Altuve because, they're always trying to push stars, whether it's Trout or Harper, now Judge. But to see him play every day, to see people watch him, if they watched him anytime, but certainly in this postseason, I mean, he is absolutely amazing. And I'm glad he got that attention. And I think now everybody finally knows about him, which is good for the sport, but good for him too.
Everybody, but I think good for kids to find what we know about baseball, to really see, wow, anyone can play. And we went through that with Dustin Pedroia not too long ago, but the thing with Altuve that I've known him now for 3 years, and he's so special to see him grow into himself as far as his personality. English is his second language, and I feel like we don't get enough from a lot of the Latin players. Because there's that hesitancy to be able to really let their personality shine in English and be able to, like, do interviews. A lot of times they'll shy away, and Altuve did for a while. So this season, to see him really, like, let America see, and honestly kind of sometimes, like, I love, like, it might not even be what he wanted to say, but how much love and affection he showed for Justin Verlander, and now there's a t-shirt out there with it. There's a sweetness to him and a purity and love for the game that I felt like didn't get shown, even if America was watching last year and the year before. It came out this year, and it did in a big way.
Are both of these teams back next year?
We've saw with the Cubs how hard it is to be, honestly, the same team virtually, and the hangover that this can cause. What I like about the future of both of these teams is there's really no – they're not losing anybody. They're losing small pieces. We talked about the youth of the Astros. They got a huge future. And you got to remember, they have Verlander through 2019. I mean, they've got Keuchel. They've got everybody, at least through next year and years beyond that. So that's exciting. But what you can't expect is what these two teams are going to go through, having come off of an emotional, one of the best World Series ever, and then starting the season very soon for them and seeing how tired they really are next season.
Yeah, but how good of a spot, too, is baseball in? Because you mentioned that series last year. Cubs-Indians was great. This year, Houston-LA, both all four should be good. Throwing the Yankees, throwing Washington. I mean, baseball's in a good spot right now, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, the Red Sox, I mean, the biggest markets are, and they're all young. Like, they're not changing. I mean, the Yankees were ahead of schedule, and you saw what they did. The Cubs are literally going to contend, and you feel like, wow, we kind of got lucky in baseball that they were just, not we, but like all the other teams got lucky that the Cubs were tired because they're crazy talented. Yeah, and then the Nationals, they're going to get a different manager. Not that it was Dusty's fault that they couldn't get past the DS, but it's in an awesome place. And I'm excited because the ratings from this World Series, the amount of conversation, the fact that people were talking about baseball instead of football for a couple weeks is a big deal in this sport, and I hope it translates into next season.
You good with the marriage proposal there at the end?
I'll tell you what, if I think Correa was good with it, and I'm sure, like, anytime you're getting proposed by the man of your dreams, I guess, I would have been like, come on, like, I got proposed in Paris. Like, that to me, like, let's go somewhere private where there's not a million eyeballs. That's me personally. I get, though, for Carlos Correa, that's the best day of his life. He wanted to capitalize on that by making the biggest decision of his life to ask his girlfriend to marry him.
What was plan B? Like, if that was a loss, I mean, that wasn't an automatic ask, was it?
No, and I think to have it all kind of thought about, and it's crazy, but yeah, if it didn't work out, what else was he going to do? I hear you.
Before we let you go, Jess, could you explain to me, and you'll have to talk to me like I'm a five-year-old, what the hell is a launch angle?
Okay, so basically, you think about getting underneath the baseball, which is the trend now. That's why we're seeing more home runs and more strikeouts. So I think when we were all taught, like, at some point to hit, it was about hitting the middle of the baseball. So think about launch angle is like guys are now trying to hit the bottom half of the baseball, right? So they're trying to hit fly balls. So a line drive, a launch angle for that would be probably anywhere between like 10 to 15 degree launch angle, meaning where the bat drops down to. So kind of picture the what's that tool used in math? I'm blanking.
A protractor. Like a protractor. Yeah.
The protractor, like, basically is like where the head is all the way down to like the feet and where your barrel drops to. So 10 to 15 degrees is like your launch angle for like a good line drive. Obviously higher than that, you get ground balls, or lower than that, you get ground balls. The launch angles now that we're seeing for home runs, the ideal is like 25 to 35 degrees. So they're just basically now trying to hit the ball in the air, and they're dropping their hands below the ball, which is crazy. Like, when you were taught to hit a baseball, I know when I was a kid, you never were taught to hit the bottom half of the baseball. You were never taught to hear even words like drop your hands and drop the barrel. It was always about line drives, ground balls, and those turn into home runs. So the game's changed, and the launch angle part of it is big. And whether guys know it or not, you get a guy like Daniel Murphy that literally will hit a ball, guys, and he'll say, oh, yeah, that was probably about like 14 degrees. I should have gotten it more like 17, 18 or whatever. Crazy. But he's rare.
There's going to be a test on this later, yeah, kid, so I hope you got that. I can't imagine how busy you are today, Jessica. Thank you so much for carving out a few minutes for us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys talking baseball. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Absolutely. You too. That is Jessica Mendoza of ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball. We will come back. Hour number two of the Lowdown on the way here on Sports 1140.